Good morning, and I'll just introduce this class is on affirmations. And, you know, we've taught this class so many times because as I realized last night when I was thinking about it for the first time, I've taught it many times, many of the teachers here have. It is the information that we'll talk about and share today is really the essence of this whole spiritual path. But the truth is that it's the essence for anybody who's trying to live their lives differently than how they've been living, for people who are in recovery, who are always affirming something about a higher power, in whatever language people put it, that what we'll talk about today and what it means to be affirming things is really the only way there is to grow spiritually. It helps us psychologically and emotionally, there's no doubt, but it really helps, it's really the only way to grow spiritually. Do you need some water, Nancy? Okay, we'll just, here, why don't you do this? I haven't taken any out of this, why don't you just have this? Go ahead, you just keep it then, it's yours. Okay. I always have it here, then I forget to drink anyway, so it's good. There you go. So I was thinking about it last night, and I, knowing how many times the class has been offered, I thought what we need to do moving forward is we're going to write this up differently. Having said that, I was just in touch with somebody who lives in a very small Eastern European country who tells me that he's one of just a couple of people who know about these teachings in the country that he lives in and how absolutely meaningful and life-changing being able to get all of this stuff online has been to him. So, again, no matter who's here, it's always wonderful because many will benefit from it. I didn't quite laugh, but I had to smile when I heard you over say, Nancy, on your way, and that your purse was stolen yesterday. And I just walked right by you and into my office, and I thought, good for you for still being here. You know, I think we don't realize often, those of us who are thoughtfully, consciously, energetically making such positive changes in our life, how differently we respond to things by virtue of doing that than other people might. Hi, Bethany. Last week, I have a very dear friend who's been very ill, and she has been coming down here. She lives up in Northern California, isolated place on the coast. She's been coming down and staying not far from me, but with another friend who has a private room and private bathroom for her, which I do not, to get all of her treatment. She's been doing this for almost a year now. She's extremely ill, and she called me last Sunday, right after Sunday service, and said to me, I'm ready to call it quits. I don't want any more treatment. Can you come over here today, help me do everything I need to do to get home, because that's where she wanted to pass when she passes. And I had already gone up there six months ago, and connected with people who will be her hospice providers up there. But we've never had to put anything into action. So I went over, and I had the really serious bad version of whatever you have right now. And all week I'd been going. I taught Wednesday night, Thursday night. Somebody else actually picked up my meditation class. You know, I taught that seminar last Saturday. I gave Sunday service here. And like a miracle, an absolute what people would call miracles, every time I stood up to speak, the illness would go away. I don't think it was very apparent last Saturday. It was not very apparent on Sunday. My voice would come back. The energy was there. And then as soon as the thing was over, whatever the thing was, I would just be ready to drop into bed. So Sunday was the end of a whole week like that. Plus, she had been down here, and I had been trying to take care of her. And I was just in one of those places like, oh, I'm going to go home and get into bed, and I'm going to watch a movie. That is, like, so unusual for me. And I thought, this is just fabulous. And I'm on my way home, and she calls me and says, can you please come instead and help me pack up, she didn't say it like this, but this house that I've been staying in for almost a year, get all my stuff home, and then help me die over the next week or two. That was a little bit of a change in plans. So I did that, of course. I went to her, and it took us till Tuesday to arrange to get two drivers, somebody to drive her, and then I would follow in my car, which her son said she would do. So I'm just about to get on the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm alone, and I hear this noise in my car. And I'm a closet mechanic, but I love doing mechanics. I used to rebuild my motorcycles and work on my cars. I haven't done it for a long time, and everything's different, but I have an ear for it. And I said, oh dear, this sounds not good. It's a little tiny hum, you know, nothing really. Every time I would accelerate, it would go away. When I wasn't accelerating, it was there. And I did all the obvious, turn the air condition off and on. I called my Volvo dealer here. The guy said, I have no idea. I said, well, Chris, can you ask somebody else? No, I hear all the problems, I would know. Well, do you know if I'm anywhere near a Volvo dealer? Sorry, can't help you, Shanti. Not very helpful. So, of course, I immediately said to Master Yogananda, you just protect me. That's what I'm going to ask of you. Just take care of me so nothing dangerous happens. Because her son's driving. We have to get her up to Sea Ranch, which is up near Mendocino. And we both have to get back that same night. So I need this car. Anyway, I just kept driving. Didn't like it. Get to Petaluma. And the short version of what even is a long story there is that whatever was going on in my car, I called my husband and I said, Google some places for me. And he was telling me all these places. Then he says, there's one called Local Heroes. I said, I love that. I'm going to them. Doesn't that just sound perfect? Local Heroes. Here's why I'm telling you this story. I get to them having stopped for gas and at Whole Foods to get a little food. And everybody comes running over to my car in both places. This sounds awful, ma'am. Whatever. I said, I know. It's worse on the outside of the car than on the inside. But this place is 4 miles down the road and I'm going. And it turns out it's a very big deal. And they can't get any of the parts. And it's going to cost well over $1,000. And I don't have a car. So I sit there, but it took 2.5 hours to do the diagnosis. And then to tell me, we can't get you your car today. So I said, well, I have to get up to Sea Ranch. So then I go walk 3 miles away to a Hertz dealer, get a rental car. It's 98 degrees there. And drive up to Sea Ranch and get her son, get her settled in, bring hospice over, drive back home. Now, it doesn't sound like a big deal in a certain way. It's a car. It's $1,000. The good news is I could come up with that $1,000. But it wasn't what I had in mind with my friend dying. I was really sick. I'd been sick all week. I had to get up to Sea Ranch. Her son's counting on me. So I just said to myself, as I was eating at Whole Foods before I took the car in, whatever happens today, you just say to yourself, this is an opportunity for you to expand and grow, whatever it is. There's no mistakes, which is what we were talking about with death and dying last week. And so I went into this car place, and these people were really lovely. They made me popcorn, and they just kept taking care of me, and they kept saying to me, who are you? I mean, why aren't you upset? Everybody who comes in here is always upset, and now we're going to tell you that this is going to be very expensive, these pieces that blew up in your car. And I just said, it's fine. You know, I prayed that I didn't get hurt, and I didn't get hurt. So we did all that. I came yesterday. Was the first day I could drive back up there to get the rental car back and pick up my car. And when I walked in, every one of those people there and at the Hertz dealer and everywhere, Shanti, they came running, they were hugging me, kissing me. They said, we washed your car, we cleaned it inside and out. This is true. Chandra was with me, you can ask her. I go to the Hertz dealer, the woman said, I went home and listened to every CD I had that said Shanti. And I thought to myself, this is the blessing. that comes from practicing affirming life. It's exactly what it is. Because although that seemed small, I know it's small. It's just the car. It's not my health. I don't have the cancer. I'm not going into hospice and many, many other things. But the truth is, as those car dealers said, and as the Hertz people said, most people would have been very irritable. They would have been very upset. It would have been a crisis. And when I heard you say, I lost my purse, and I thought, so many people, I mean, my purse was stolen, which is even worse, would not have been here today. And I really want to applaud you because I think it's a way of holding on to what matters, what's important. Not that that's not an enormous hassle. I just went, oh God, I'm so glad that wasn't me. I would rather have my car die on the Golden Gate Bridge than have to go through replacing everything that would be in my purse. And never mind my whole calendar and my computer. No, not my purse, but anyway. So, you know, what happened this past week for me was an experience where I could feel loved and embraced, and I was uplifted, and they were uplifted, and you're going to be here, and you're going to be affirmed, as opposed to feeling sorry for ourselves or getting agitated, irritated, which is sort of understandable. But if we don't do that, if we make other choices, life goes a different way. And that's what this is about, this class is about. Now, Yogananda, who is, of course, our teacher here, and I think all of you have been here. Have you been to a class here yet, Christine? You have? Okay. So you know a little bit about. And this particular path isn't what's important today. It's not like people have to be on this path to benefit from this teaching. But he was very strong with these affirmations, as was Swami Kriyananda. And I'm going to spend some time, of course, talking about why that's the case. What are we doing with our consciousness? What happens? How profound are the changes that we can make? But I think in the past, the class has been very much about doing affirmations because they matter a great deal. And we're going to get to that. It's a practice, and I'm going to give you affirmations, and I'm going to talk to you about how to take them home and incorporate them into your life. But I'd like to talk just a little bit first, not just a little bit, but to really lay a groundwork about what does it mean in life to be somebody who is willing, first of all, and then able, and the able is what I hope we all learn a little more about today, but the willingness to begin with to affirm that which is our highest self, to talk a little bit about how it's our truest self and the ways that it can change our lives. It's not simple or easy because it's not even easy to want to change. And we can get fooled like this. We think that. All of us, I'm saying we, including myself for sure, that we want to change. And in many ways we do, when the price tag isn't too great. But when you start trying to convince your ego to change something about itself that it's become identified with, that is what it thinks makes it feel strong, or what it thinks justifies its ways of reacting in the world. You know, how many times have any of you heard, because I have over and over and over, I probably heard it 3 times yesterday, where people would be sitting and talking to me and say, well, yeah, but that was justified, or that was understandable that he or she reacted or responded the way they did. And I know that. I say that a lot myself. To myself. I don't quite have the nerve anymore to say it out loud. Too many people watching me who know I know better. But I do say it. you know? And now, recently, my line is, well, about up until maybe a year or two ago, my line was, and I meant it, and it was my truth, so I had to be honest, I'll allow myself this space, but after 2 days, I'll be sick and tired of hearing myself whine, and I'll move on. And that was my truth for a long time. I could get away with complaining, feeling sorry for myself for about 2 days, and then I'd say, okay, are you over it yet? Whatever the it was. That's the hardest thing, is that our lessons, which we learn, are easy when they're easy, you know, relatively easy when your car dies and you're stuck like that. Relatively easy when your purse gets stolen is really the truth. After all, next week, it's not even going to be an issue for either of us. It's already not an issue for me. Went and got my cute little car back yesterday. I'm as happy as can be. And I'll probably think of it once when the credit card bill comes. And then that'll be the end of it, you know, really. And your purse, you'll have called the DMV and your credit card companies and all those people. And these things pass. But the truth is, everything passes. Everything does. No matter how hard or serious it is, at some point. I mean, this life for me has only been 68 years so far, whatever it's been for anybody. I can think of really, really difficult things that have happened to me in this life. I can also think of some of the most joyful moments in my life. Both of the times I got married, neither of which exist anymore. I mean, the feeling does, and a lot of the love does, but the marriages don't. It's just sort of interesting. Just that which is in the moment that feels so enormous. I can think of my father dropping dead when he was 39 years old and my very best friend in the world for 14 years. It was a huge, huge loss to me. But where is all of that now? And I'm not saying that it doesn't matter when these things happen. These things are what become the fiber of who we are. The choice lies in how we use them. And what we do with them, and what our attitude is about them. Does anybody have any comments or questions? I don't know if anybody came with any ideas about what you'd like to hear or learn today. Now would be the moment to talk to me about it a little bit. We're open. We're a small group. We can go anywhere. I need to share certain things, but does what I'm saying make sense so far? Everybody okay? Yeah, okay, good. We are living in an era of energy. We all know that, even if we knew nothing about, even if we were spiritually unconscious, we would know that. We know it just by listening to the scientists of our time, that everything's about energy now. And I've said that probably to all of you many times, so I'm not going to go backwards and say it, but I will mention it because it's, again, the essence of building the understanding of affirmation, that everything is energy and that that can always be changed and transformed. From a spiritual perspective, it gets even more meaningful when we're going to talk about affirmations. And I'd like to explain a little bit about that to you so that you can see where and how this notion of being positive, but this is much more than being positive. This is, Swami Kriyananda says, an affirmation is a statement of our highest potential. It's not a statement of the highest that we've achieved so far. That's not it at all. It's a statement of our highest potential, even when we have not realized that yet, even when we have not expanded into our highest potential yet. It doesn't matter where we are in this life. It doesn't matter if we're people who still know moments of jealousy, of greed, of judgmentalness, because quite frankly, we all do. everybody in this room does, no matter how subtle it still is in you. And then you know whatever else you're wrestling with or looking at to expand. Every one of us has some of this in us still. What we're doing with affirmations is we are affirming above and beyond all of that, and that'll be the last time that I give any credence to those limitations, because even what I just said carries with it so much energy that it takes us in a direction that we don't want to be going energetically, which is what affirmations are about. It's not that we're dishonest with ourselves. It's not that we would lie about a limitation. It's that we don't want to be giving it energy. Even if we have to notice it, Swami Kriyananda put it beautifully when he talks about his being able to quit smoking. He was a cigarette smoker in his younger days. And he said he would never tell himself that he can't quit smoking or he hasn't been able to quit smoking without adding yet. I haven't done it yet, which is an affirmation. It's not actually an affirmation in the way we're going to talk about them, but it's a statement that says, I will. I haven't done it yet, but I will is the unspoken end of that. And it's a very different way to hold something that's been holding us back so that we're not giving our limitations energy. It's so unimaginably important to not do that in life. So the beginning of all of this is a statement about super consciousness, or that form of energy. It's a form of energy that encompasses, that is the source of, the beginning of all that we see and know in our world. All of the animate objects, all of the inanimate objects, everything are, because we're saying everything is energy, that it is at its very core, at some very beginning, all a part of one big whole, whole, and that whole is what we call superconsciousness. It's that which incorporates everything we know, and not just things. And this is where it gets very hard, and I will ask you to not try and understand this rationally right now. But even our thoughts, even our feelings, even our what feel like spontaneous reactions to things, nothing can happen. No energy can move because that isn't a part of our superconscious selves. And our superconscious selves are what everything is. When we say we are a part of all that is, or when we say the word our higher power or God or however anybody wants to state that, what we're talking about is superconsciousness. And what superconsciousness is the origin of everything we know and of everything that is, even that which we don't know. Because we don't know in this form about all of the other galaxies that exist, and we don't even know about what kind of life exists on Mars, where we've already examined, never mind what's beyond our ability to perceive right now. You know, I was, I can't remember why I just reviewed this. It had nothing to do with this talk. It might have been for this class last week on death and dying, as I was listening to a talk that I had given years ago. In the late 1800s, the man who was in charge of the patent office wrote a letter to the then president of the United States. Somebody in one of my classes reminded me who that probably was in the late 1890s, but I don't remember. But whoever it was, it doesn't matter. The letter was a suggestion that they close the patent office because he was sure that everything that could ever be discovered already had been. It's in the Library of Congress. Isn't that amazing? I mean, that's what the human mind does. It thinks that exactly what it sees is all that is. But that is so completely not true. So what the great spiritual teachers, all of them, have said to us is what you see is such a minuscule part of all that is. But that all that is, which is all one energy, is what we're going to call superconsciousness. Now, whenever that form had a thought that it would create anything, and this leads to the question that everybody has, which I cannot answer, which the avatars of the whole world, for as long as we've known them and we've been able to study them, have refused to answer directly, leads to the question of why did God, that superconsciousness, create us? I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. And I mean this really seriously. I could never begin to answer it. Buddha gave the best answer that I've ever heard when his students asked him, when he said, the mind that would ask that question could never understand the answer. Because the answer to that question about what creation is all about is beyond mind. So as long as we're trying to be logical and rational, we can't answer it. There's no way. Swami Kriyananda had a beautiful answer to it, which in my own simple and naive way, I used to think to myself, and it was wonderful to hear him say it. And he said, what difference does it make, really? It's a question you can't really answer, but what difference does it make anyway? Why not just take what you can know about life and decide to move forward with it, to expand with it, to become the best you can be, and not try and figure out what you don't know, what you can't know? What I've come to see is the people who like to belabor that question, people who can't get away from that question, are usually people who are hurting and want to look for a cause, a reason for their pain in a rational way. How could God have done this to me? Why would God have created me when I was just going to come here and suffer? I've heard it over and over. How could I believe in a loving God if that were the case? Or there's people who are simply too afraid to let go of their minds because they've learned to exist in the world by being smart, by being competent, by learning more, by having a big fund of knowledge, all of which is wonderful. But it's terrifying to quit being rational then and to imagine letting go and having an experience that's beyond your rational mind or other than your rational mind. I can relate to that. I was raised in the 60s, and everybody was doing a lot of drugs in those days. Not like today. I will say, not every day, all day. You know, most of my friends and me experimented with a lot of those drugs. But it wasn't about using them to live. I don't know how to explain it. Addiction was simply, none of my best friends became addicted to anything. So it was really different. I mean, we would smoke marijuana once a month. We weren't smoking marijuana every day, all day. I remember experimenting with cocaine a couple of times, like two or three times, and realizing how much I loved it, because I did. It was great. I was a dancer, and I could dance all night. And then just saying to myself, that's it. You're never touching it again, because I liked it too much. And just, I never thought of it again. I never used it again. But I would never let myself ever take anything that was hallucinogenic. It terrified me. The idea of being out of control in that way just terrified me. And I often think that that's some version of what people feel who are afraid to meditate, to develop a practice of meditation or these other practices that they feel might take them, Because people even who meditate often ask me, you know, if we meditate until we become breathless, what does that mean? Like you, it's horrifying to most people to think of not breathing because they're thinking of this body not breathing. So anyway, all by way of saying, when we start thinking of super consciousness and we get to this point where we say that essence had a thought or made a decision, whatever that looked like, to express the thought, to express itself. That was the thought, I will express myself away from this state of oneness. It did that through its energetic form by adding a vibration to it, literally, by beginning an outward vibration, which is energy vibrating. So it was a thought that went to energy, and that energy ultimately becomes forms. Really, in essence, it's a simple version of what happens. So thought we call the causal world. Energy we call the astral plane, causal plane, astral plane. And then the form is the material plane. When we talk about affirmations being an affirmation of our highest potential, we're talking about the causal plane. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about remembering, not with our minds, but with our entire being, who we really are. Now again, we can't imagine this with our minds, because it's the mind's business, it's its job in life, the ego, to forget that. This is a very interesting realization that I had a month ago after being on this path, being on any spiritual path since I'm 28 years old, literally meditating since that time. I realized Yogananda's definition of ego is a soul identified with the body. As the instant the soul becomes identified with the body, there's an ego. And that is what the ego is, which means that the ego itself is part of the soul. It's a soul identified with the body, but it's part of the soul. But its main job is to be identified with this body as it is and to keep us, really, in essence, it doesn't say this, but it's limited here, limited to the belief that this is what we are, to the understanding, to the, from the time that we are infants to beginning, well, really, in essence, from the time of conception. Because then all of the attention and energy is away from our superconscious state. And it's into, even in its embryonic form, developing this body. So are you all still with me? So from the instant of conception, there's an ego that has as its job to focus on this body and this mind, and everything that develops from that moment on. What I realized about a month ago is that it's part of the soul, though, which made it easier for me to conceptualize in my own mind, moving it back towards the soul. I didn't really need that in a way because I meditate, and that's the best way. We're never going to get there with the mind, ever. It's a virtual impossibility. Because as long as we're using our mind, we're separate from our soul. No matter how evolved our minds get, it keeps us separate. Which is the, I said this last week, Nancy, at that conference, but this is the interesting thing about what all the physicists are doing right now. They're trying so hard to understand, and they're beginning to get this whole thing about super consciousness and God, and they're even saying maybe this is God, but they're always trying to figure it out with their mind. And it leaves it being as different as day and night, no matter how close they get. You can't get there through the mind. They have to leave all of their books, all of their study, and they have to develop a practice of meditation. Swami Kriyananda, Vinny may know this better than I do, but Swami Kriyananda wrote a song. Do you remember the name? Oh, the boatman, the wise boatman or something? You know, where the man's on the boat with all of his books?
The philosopher and the boatman.
The philosopher and the boatman. And it's adorable. It's about exactly this, now that I'm thinking about it, because the philosopher's on a boat and he's trying to tell everybody how smart he is and how wonderful he is. And the boat starts to sink. And he has to get rid of all of his books, but they have everything they came with. Anyway, a very clever way of putting this into a song and into an adorable song. But it's absolutely true that ultimately, if you can't leave your mind, you can't know the spiritual truths. So whatever happened with those thoughts and with the manifestation of energy, and then with each of us, we have become, not only in this lifetime, and this makes it even a little more challenging for us, because even as we were born into this life, we came in with a spiritual blueprint that is about our preferences, that is about some already knowing who we are, what we've been in past lives, what it is we need to do in this life to keep growing, but it's already been in that way determined for us. This is our astral spine, our energetic spine. This is how we're formed from that causal plane. And in our chakras, in these seven vortices of energy, lie all of this energy that's informing us. And it's informing us in a way that's not in our conscious minds. So whatever's in our conscious minds, it's a lot easier to work with and say, I'm going to change this habit I have. I used to bite my nails terribly when I was a very young person. And I just decided one day, probably as an older teenager, when I became a lot more obsessed with what I looked like, that biting my nails was not something I wanted to keep doing. I tried to quit biting my nails. It was hard. It was really hard. I tried putting nail polish on those ugly nails to remind me. That didn't work. And in those days, I don't know if they still have it, but they had this stuff that just tasted terrible. And then finally, I put that on my nails. But I could work with it until soon I quit biting my nails. I could quit that habit. Those habits that we can see and that are out there are so much easier to work with than those tendencies that we have in our chakras that we're not even consciously aware of. We all know how hard it is. I just gave you an example that was easy. But how many of us have qualities about ourselves that we want to change? All of my life, this is funny, actually. I hadn't thought about this in decades, but I'll share it with you. I'm sharing it with you just to trigger something that you've had. But all of my life, I wanted to be somebody who talked less. I always talked a lot. And I always wanted to be somebody who talked less. And I would try. I have probably committed myself to that. I quit trying probably now at least 20 years ago. But at least 20 years ago, I was still in my late 40s. I mean, you have to hear how long this stuck with me till I realized I'm a talker, and I have this great good blessing of these masters using me now at least to share meaningful things. But I would tell myself over and over, don't speak, don't speak. When you go to this party, don't talk. You be a listener. Don't say a word. Keep your hands like this. When you look down at your hands, remember, you're not going to speak. I had so many cues and memories to try and get myself to talk less. It was impossible. I came in with my throat chakra in that direction. That was it. I could never do that. I just simply couldn't. I still can't. I still talk a lot. Hopefully it's more meaningful than not, but it's... So even these qualities that we want to change, and you'll each have your own examples of that, are very, very difficult. It's very challenging. Now, they're not all supposed to be changed. That's the point. Now I understand my throat chakra is not simply about my speaking a lot. It's a lot about expression and what I'm expressing, and I don't even mean just words that come through me. I mean, there's many things about a throat chakra. That's not the point right now. But it's much more about getting ourselves balanced, getting that energy literally neutralized so that it can continue to flow. So it's not about just squelching ourselves. And I was in a very misinformed way trying to do that. But it's very, very hard to change. And it's challenging to change that which we know. And unless we develop the right tools, it's impossible to change that which we don't know with our conscious mind. Okay? So, affirmations are one way, just one way, of taking our energy and putting it somewhere without needing to analyze all that's going on down here, without really needing to have all of the talks with ourselves, with our partners, with everybody else, all of the processing that we do in life all of the time. I'm not saying it's all bad, because hopefully some of it is more uplifting and more expansive than where we are, but all of the habits that we're trying to change, probably everybody in the world would have an easier time moving into the solution of those problems. You know, I mean, all this stuff that comes out in relationships and everywhere, all relationships with our parents, with our siblings, with our partners, if we could be working on it energetically rather than just emotionally and mindfully. And how are we going to do that? Well, we can say, because this is the bottom line about everything, the bottom line is that we could be meditating. But since most of us are not in a position to just sit down and begin to meditate and move ourselves into a totally centered, energy neutralized place, which is called samadhi, being one with all that is, remembering that. I used that word before and I wanted to come back because I never finished that thought. This is not a remembering with the mind. This is a remembering from the inside out. And so it can only come to us, that awareness of who we really are, of what our soul's journey is, of where we're needing to go to solve whatever the problem is, whatever it is, getting along better with your partner, getting along better at work, being able to concentrate better at work, finding more energy in life because we're somebody who gets tired easily. It's really what all illness is about, though very few of us can get ourselves there in any one lifetime. But if we were perfectly aligned, attuned energetically, well, there's really no such thing as illness. We're outside of these bodies. We never even have to come back into these bodies. So if we could meditate perfectly like that, we would know all of this. But most of us cannot, because our mind gets in the way, starts talking to us and doesn't want us to sit too long, and we get up physically uncomfortable, or we remember that we have to get up to put something on a list, or we just a phone call that we need to make, or we start having a discussion with our boss, what we're going to tell them later, because we just solved a problem or we just figured out how to tell our partner that they've been wrong about what they're trying to tell us. Whatever it is, that's what happens. That's what the mind does. So meditation is very, very challenging. The better way is to trick the mind, if you will, is to give it something to do that's a lot better than what it typically does. When we teach meditation here, we teach a technique from Ed One called Hung Sa. It's an ancient mantra. It didn't just come with our teachers on this path. And it, in essence, means I am that. I am one with all that is. I am really pure energy, pure super consciousness. And we say to the mind here, just repeat this mantra over and over. Because that is way better than all those other things I just mentioned that our mind usually or often does. With affirmations, what we're saying is we will give the mind something to do that's going to take it to a better place than wherever it just was energetically. And we do it with affirmations, which are words, because words are crystallized thoughts. That's what they are. Remembering again and always that we're just working with energy. We're just figuring out ways to remind ourselves who we are and to find ways to, instead of letting our energy sink in all the ways that it can sink, to find ways to remind ourselves that we can use and transform that energy to become our higher, more expansive self. So we take words, and we can do this in many ways. We can say them. We can chant them. This is why Yogananda said, I mean, obviously years ago, he died in 1952, chanting is half the battle. What did he mean by that? He actually meant several things by it, because chanting is music, and music is something that, if it's inspired music, if it's uplifting music, will help us draw our energy up into our heart chakras, which is really where we want to be drawing it. And from our heart, we focus it up towards the point between the eyebrows. We basically send it up there. And music, the right kinds of music, does this. If it's the wrong kinds of music, we all know, it draws us into our lower chakras. That's what it does. And if it's really the wrong kind of music, it draws us so far in, I don't even think we have a chakra to talk about that. What is that that happens? I mean, it's different for each of us, you know, what we hear. But for me, it turned out to be a lot of that. Well, a lot of the very darkest kind of rap can take me there, heavy metal. I could never, I think by then I had sort of changed my energy enough that I just couldn't listen to it. Maybe people felt that way about rock and roll. Rock and roll never did that to me. But rock and roll, and this is really true. I've thought about this a lot about music, because I could still listen to the Beatles sing and not be appalled energetically. And why is that? And it's not just the Beatles. It could be, I mean, whoever all of them were. I mean, Paul Simon and Paul Anka, who probably nobody in this room remembers, but you know, you do, yeah. But anyway, whatever it was, we were always singing about love. All of our music was about love. It was about make peace, not war. The people's minds, even though it's not inspired music, much of it, some of it is, I think. I have to say, I think Paul Simon and other people did hear some of their music, and it took us to a new and better place. It wasn't this, but it was uplifting. It was way better than where people were when they were, you know, starting things on fire to demonstrate against the Vietnam War. You know, we look at a thing like Woodstock, where people got together and were really, they had flowers in their hair, you know, and it was much of it was very sweet. It wasn't this, but it was very sweet, and it was really taking people in a better direction. But so there's very dark music, and there's very high music. I don't think most of you, I know Vinny was at a sermon that I gave last week, but I mentioned a book that I have that I go back and read often, parts of it, called Talks with Great Composers. It's an extraordinary book. And it's, were you here, Nancy, at service? So it's a book about conversations that the author had with Brahms. And then he went on to have conversations with other composers, always with composers who received their music from a place of inspiration. And Brahms himself even said not every piece was that way, but as he became a more mature musician, he would only put music down that came from that place of inspiration. And he talked in these conversations about pieces of his and of other composers that were very popular at the time. This was in the late 1890s when he was having this conversation. But he said, nobody will be listening to this music in 50 years. Now, part of that is what I started to say at the very beginning when I was speaking, in that this is an age of energy. And very specifically, and I think Brahms, whether he knew it or not in his mind, intuitively, and when he was in that place of inspiration, inspiration is superconscious. It has nothing to do with the mind. You can't think and figure out the music. You hear it, and it goes on paper. And he knew that. He speaks about it beautifully in that book. And he talks about Beethoven, who wrote a lot of his music from an inspired place, and Haydn and other composers, Mozart. I mean, we all knew that, sort of, because Mozart wrote a symphony when he was 5 years old. He wrote a symphony and all of the parts for the orchestra. How do you do that? For a while, I thought maybe it happened by, children come in and they're still connected, and they haven't fully left their spiritual self. They remember a lot of their past lives. And much of what we write off in children is true. They're having the experience of a past life. Much of this has been documented now. And I used to think maybe Haydn was hearing his symphony, that one symphony, from a past life, something he didn't get down previously. Because, you know, obviously it's impossible for a five-year-old. But from what Brahms said, he was inspired, and he wrote that way. So, I mean, either way, it makes sense, but that's what he was able to do. But I think Brahms even knew that 50 years from when he lived, we would be moving further into this period of time called Dwapara Yuga, which really translates to the age of energy. And if you think about everything that's happened, which is what led me to talk before about that man with the patent office. So much has happened that has to do with energy and how we've learned to use energy. I mean, including, unfortunately, the atomic bomb and other things. It hasn't all been good. It will get better as we move further into this age, which is called a yuga. The energy will be more uplifted. We're moving through a time now where we're ascending into higher ages. But the periods of the yugas are so big. Who knows how many lifetimes we'll go through before it gets to be so much better. But we are just coming out of a very, very dark time, which we all know historically. If we look back just to the last 1,000 years, we can see how dark it was. So we're coming up out of that into this age of energy. And the energy is the way it is right now. The scientists are discovering things, and we're discovering energy in smaller and smaller particles. And again, all of this will change. But Yogananda came in as an avatar to teach us these things exactly perfectly in this age of energy, because everything he taught us is about energy very specifically. If anybody in this room has read the autobiography of a yogi, you know that. And teaching us with all of these techniques how to use energy. So a very simple affirmation that everybody in the room knows is this, what we call superconscious living exercises that we teach in at Ananda, They come from Yogananda. I am positive, energetic, enthusiastic. We teach this in Med One. You're just, or I am awake and ready. So have you taken Med One? Okay, so you learn it. Oh, you're taking it. You just took it, right? So I taught you this the first week. I am awake and ready. That's an affirmation. And that says, no matter what's really going on, it always makes me laugh because we teach Med One at 7:30 at night. And there are very few people who walk in there awake and ready. I mean, totally understandably, they've had a hard day at work. They've just eaten a big dinner, probably. And then they come, and one of the first things we teach in class are these super conscious living exercises. So long before anybody has said a word to everybody who comes. And of course, many of those people will take Med One, maybe Med Two, and then maybe never come back to Ananda. So you don't even have to have the teachings to be practicing what Yogananda came to teach, even before meditation. If people stood up every day of their lives and practice those super conscious living exercises. Now, Med Two here are energization exercises. They're different. But the super conscious living, I am awake and ready. I am positive, energetic, enthusiastic. And the rest of them, those are the two most, the two real affirmations. Because even when we say, awake my brain, it's different than saying, my brain is awake and ready. It's not an affirmation. But the first two really are. And if people just, for the rest of their lives, did that twice a day, their lives would change completely and totally. I can say that for sure. Their lives won't change in the way that they would change if they go on and begin a practice of meditation and learn everything that's going to come in Meditation 2, in Meditation 3, in Meditation 5. I mean, if you learn all of those techniques, you know, Med One itself is a building block. Each week, at least as I teach it, I didn't get to finish that class, but I add another technique in that have to do with chanting and prayer. I rarely get to the affirmations, but sometimes I do. These are all techniques to be moving energy. And those first two techniques that anybody learns, they transform you if you do them. And I started to talk a little bit before. I'm going to finish this, then I'm going to take a break so that we can all just stand up and move and I can get a glass of water. But with chanting, where so much of it, and one of the main reasons that Master says chanting is half the battle, is because when you are just doing music, when you're chanting and you have music in your mind, it's literally stimulating a very different part of your brain, and it makes it easier to move beyond that which is logical and rational. And for us, in our language, we would say it lifts our energy beyond the first, second, and third chakra, which are all about form. It's about the earth, it's about water, it's about fire. It's about form in one way or another. Until you burn everything up in your third chakra, purify it, it becomes air. This is a really simplified version of the chakras, but it's true in its simple form. And air does not, if you don't contain it, you can contain it. If you don't, it can expand. It's more towards formlessness than anything we've experienced so far, by far. So when you move things into the heart, which has to do with devotion, it also has to do with emotions, which is why we need to balance it, right? This is all important with these affirmations. It gives you an entire understanding and energetic awareness of why we will come back and learn how to do them. But if we move things up into the heart, which the music does, We're moving all of our energy in the right direction. Now, the way people chant in India, and Yogananda, of course, came from India, and then he westernized it for us. You will not find many occasions at Ananda, and I've always been very sorry about this because I'm very Indian in nature, but I understand it. It was not his mission. Where many nights where we'll sing Sanskrit chants. We do on Krishna's birthday and Shiva Ratri and other celebrations of certain aspects of the divine, Durga. So we're celebrating the female. But anyway, as a rule, we don't. As a rule, our chants that came both through Yogananda and Kriyananda are in English. But the way they're done is that they're repeated. So who's ever leading the chant sings a line, we repeat a line. They sing a line, we sing a line, over and over and over. And those of us who have been chanting for many, many years know at first we often chant very loudly. And then, as the evening goes on for us, sometimes we're not even chanting. We're absorbed in the energy. Sometimes we're still chanting. Sometimes we get distracted, and then we come back and we start chanting loudly again. Then it just gets softer and softer. This is a way to do it. We'll talk about it, to teach it as a way. But you could notice people who have been doing it for a long time just doing it unconsciously or superconsciously. They just get pulled into the energy until soon they just don't want to have to be putting the energy out with words. They don't want to do that. So they're just more and more and more quiet. And it doesn't mean that they're absent. Quite the contrary. It means the chanting has worked both from a musical perspective and from an energetic perspective, even because of the words themselves that are being chanted and the energy behind the words. So I just want to say two things to you before we break. There's a man who just died a couple of weeks ago. I think his name was Oliver Stone. Does anybody know that name? Oliver Sacks, thank you. Yeah. Is it Sacks? Who, the musicologist, the guy who, music in the brain. He's not a musicologist, I don't think.
He's a neurologist.
Okay, thank you. Is his last name Sacks? It's funny, I love his books and I've read them. They are phenomenal. He wrote a book called Musicophilia, I think is the name of it, that really talks about, in the most extraordinary way, he worked a lot because he was a neurologist. Thank you for reminding me of all that. That just left my mind. He wrote about working with children with autism and music, because music is so powerful. And I can't remember, but why this is all in my mind right now is because he died, and then in the second week in September, I took a week vacation, and my husband and I rented a house up on the northern coast, and we were watching a movie, and I wish I could remember the name of the movie. Maybe you'll know, but it's about a couple who had a special needs child, and they wind up using a woman, not a neurologist, I don't think. Maybe she's a psychologist, I'm sorry. Even in the movie, I don't remember now. Who had some theories in her mind about the impact that music could have. And they start working with this couple's son. But it's a very interesting movie. If you haven't seen it, I want you to get it. The father was so opposed to the music that the son loved, which was a lot of that music that I wasn't so into, that he became enraged with this therapist who's working with the son, who figured out that if she could get the music that the son loved, that it might be a good way to work with him. I don't want to say anymore, because if you see the movie, which I do recommend it. And I said to my husband when it was over, I said, you know, this is interesting. I just remember reading that Oliver Sacks died last week. I said this in September. And I said, this just reminds me so much of his work. And then we were watching the credits, and it was based on all of his work. It's a wonderful movie. His work is great, but his work says in a scientific way what, of course, these masters know. He's not talking about the chakras, but that's really what's happening. He's studying it at the best level he could. But from a neurochemical, neuroscientific background basis, he's watching things change. He just couldn't take it, I don't think. I don't want to discredit him because I don't know enough about him. Maybe he was somebody who, maybe he was a meditator, maybe he was on a spiritual path. But he certainly knew about this scientifically. The other thing I wanted to say is this. Sanskrit words have a vibration to them. The language itself is based on the on an energetic vibration of words. In other words, the energy, this is always true, but it was done more knowingly with Sanskrit, as that it's a very old language. And the energy came through and the words formed. Just like I was saying to you, causal, astral, the energy comes through us and we form, or the energy is, and it vibrates at a certain frequency and it forms matter. In this case, with the Sanskrit language, the matter is the word. And the words, then, when you speak them, you are attuning yourself to a very specific vibration that is always uplifting in the language, when you're saying mantras, when you're saying certain words, certainly when you're chanting Sanskrit chants, the words themselves, just by saying them, you never have to know what they mean, energetically will carry you. And although, and I believe, I would say for sure, that both Master and Swami Kriyananda, when they wrote these chants, even in English, that they wrote, because they were not writing them. They were inspired chants. They were receiving the vibration. Even though it's English, when we chant their chants, we're being affected in much the same way. Master said about the autobiography of a yogi, and when he gave the famous talk that he gave at an outdoor party in Beverly Hills, where he said, "Mark my words, these words will be registered in the ether, words as crystallized thoughts which are energy." He said, "My words will be registered in the ether." But he was saying, "I am putting this out there," and he was talking about forming in the future, when people live in spiritual communities, that is how that will be a way that people will grow spiritually, get to know these teachings. I'm trying to shorten. Basically, that became our path because Swami Kriyananda heard that talk, but it was registered in the ether. When he says that, he means, I'm putting it out there and this will happen. Spiritual communities will grow and they will be, in a way, people's salvation. I mean, I'm saying that. He did not say those words, but I'm saying that. That's what that talk was about. And so I'm saying it to you only now to say, when you chant or when you say an affirmation, and particularly affirmations or chants that these avatars have given us, there's as much in the energy of it. So when people in my medical practice say to me, I want to write my own affirmation, I say, okay, we can do that. And I help them do that. But I know for sure that if they would use one of these affirmations that we'll share later and get back to, that so much energy has been registered in them. They are energy that will carry us. Am I being clear? I've never quite said this out loud before in this way, so I want to say, understand? Okay, before we take a break, does anybody have any thoughts or questions, comments, anything? Okay, any thoughts or questions, or should I just move on. I always think, oh dear, by this time everybody must just be very tired of hearing my voice. We can hear yours if you'd like for a little while. No comments. Everybody okay? I wanted to just, again, before we get into the affirmations themselves, mention a couple of other things about this energy. Because, again, it's the whole purpose for it. If we don't understand this or have this, then doing the affirmations themselves wouldn't make any sense. Part of why I said at the very beginning of class that even speaking about our limitations can do great harm is because every single thought that we have, every word that we use, whether it's directed towards ourselves or anybody else, is always affecting our energetic being. So this is our astral being. This is what's in our astral spine, as I was speaking about just a little bit ago. And if we have developed negative thought patterns, negative behaviors, whether they're conscious or unconscious, doesn't even really matter. They're impacting. It's almost like you have something there, and every time you touch it, it leaves a little imprint on it. So every time we have a negative thought, that's what's happening. Every time we decide that we cannot do something, that we don't have it in us, and we allow ourselves to continue in that way, we literally are pulling, magnetizing. And that is a literal thing. We're all magnetic. This energy is magnetic with positive and negative sides. And we are magnetizing energy down our spine, astral spine, which is not where we want to be going. And the important thing to realize is that it's not like it takes a huge amount of time, energy. People say to me, oh, when I talk to them, I'm just trying to come up with a good example in my mind right now, but many times I'll say to people about changing a habit, changing a thought, well, I'll do what they'll say, but it's really going to take some time. There's the affirmation. There's the belief. Okay, yes, it will, because you just decided that. Not because changing energy really takes any time. If you take a magnet and you bring it up against nails, they're there. You can turn energy around as in an instant. This is not about time. This is why Swami Kriyananda used to lament so adorably with us when he would look out at us when he was speaking to us and saying, you know, you're going to get this sometime. You're going to change all this. You're going to become this. Why not do it right now? And I think, you know, we may all know that as a parent or being around somebody that we've loved. And I used to feel so badly for him because we just weren't able to do it, you know, like right now. He wasn't being mean with us. He was being actually very affectionate and warm. But I could understand it just takes a moment and everything can be different. It just takes that desire and that willingness and that energy, because it does take energy. And the other thing that Master said, and I want to bring this in as we go to talk about these techniques, is the greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. The more we're willing to do something, and he said many times, it's not just that kind of willpower that says, I'm going to do this even if it kills me. It's not that energy. It's a willingness to do whatever it is we're talking about, become something other than who we are, change some aspect of ourselves, surrender to a higher, more expansive thought. I don't know what that noise was. It sounds like an ice cream truck or something, but I doubt that. Anyway, if we're willing to do it, and I'm saying it with a lot of emphasis because this is one thing to really ask yourselves, not now, but when you're alone and when you can be honest, do you really want to change? And I think just our asking ourselves that heightens our awareness in a way that can be very useful. I say it because I can feel within myself the resistance to want to change certain aspects of myself that I know I say to myself, you'd be so much better off. But what is that that holds on? And I've said this in many of my classes before. I've worked with many, many clients. Many. I mean, means I can think of at least 10 who've consciously said to me, you were right, I'm not ready to be better yet, and have left my practice. As they started feeling better, not just physically, but the way holding on to something, they would get too frightened. And it's so subtle, because when I first asked those people, because I probably had some intuitive sense of them, are you sure you want to be better? They looked at me like in an irritated way. Of course I want to be better. Why would you even be asking that question? And then at least three people have said to me over the years, it's very meaningful, you were right. I can't be better now. I can't let go of this physical symptom, this way of being. In one case, it was in a relationship. A man just said, I've only just realized if I begin to feel better, my marriage will fall apart. I think he was actually right. It's interesting. I mean, just the way relationships can be built. And he was going to choose staying where he was rather than being well and potentially giving up his relationship. And I have no judgment about that. You know, we all change when we're ready and in the ways that we're ready. But you hear me emphasize, you can't be going at opposing directions like this. It doesn't work. You don't make any progress. So we need to get clear about, in what ways am I ready to grow? In what ways am I ready to expand? In what ways do I really want to make this effort, be willing, bring all of my willingness? Because energy is energy. All of the energy that we've been using to stay stuck, even if it's unconscious, we can flip that around and bring that same amount of energy to being free in whatever way that is. It's different. There's so many millions of ways. And in that moment, we could be free. And we have to say that to ourselves. I have a choice to make. Again, I know it sounds like a silly example. It came into my conscious mind sitting at Whole Foods this past week. I am not going to get upset about this. I'm going to be positive, energetic, enthusiastic. I said to myself, right in Whole Foods. And I was. But what would have happened if I'd let myself become unconscious? I don't know. You know? It was an inconvenience to many people what was happening. And my friend needed me to help her die. It wasn't just like I was hanging out for the day. So it had that power behind it. If you see, it's so easy to see how we can justify or let ourselves just get a little bit unconscious about things. It's, forgive me, this is a little off color, but I've said it many times because it's the most striking example of this that I have. So many times in my practice, people have come to me. You know, I had a traditional medical practice all these years. Either pregnant or with a sexually transmitted disease because they were not practicing having protected sex. And then I would talk with them and I would say in some way or another, well, what happened? I mean, what were you thinking? Or how? They'll say, you know, I don't know. I don't know how it happened. I just found myself in bed with this person. And it's always made me giggle. How do you just find yourself in bed? There was a million decision points along that line. How does that happen? And you think if it happens right out in the world like that, imagine how it happens with all of the subtle energies, how often we just aren't thinking. But if we focus on bringing as much willpower as we can, we can change any habit that we have. We truthfully, though, we shouldn't use this to beat ourselves up, can change anything about ourselves. Anything. We just have to know it. When I was sick last week, I kept saying to myself, the first night that I awakened with a sore throat, my husband said to me, are you sick? And I could barely swallow. I said, I am absolutely not sick. And the whole next day he would say to me, honey, you sure look sick. Nope, I'm not sick. I just wasn't strong enough. I just wasn't strong enough to hold that affirmation and win with the virus. The virus won that war, but I was trying, but I just was not where I was either then or maybe in general right now. So we don't beat ourselves up when those things happen. I took the next step and I said, okay, why am I sick? What am I supposed to be getting from this? And I took a day off of work, which was the perfect thing to do. Okay, so Swamiji says here, by strongly and deliberately affirming positive qualities with full awareness and deep concentration. Easy words to say again, not so easy to do all the time. One can undo, even in a few minutes, the negative effects of a lifetime. That's actually a pretty amazing sentence, which is why I wrote it here. With full awareness and deep concentration, one can undo, even in a few minutes, the negative effects of a lifetime. Okay. Now, and then he says, this is just one more thing I'll read because it's not usually useful, but I want to say this to show you the truth, and the truth from Swamiji, Swami Kriyananda. He says, the delusions of, let me just back up here and see. He says, even after perceiving certain truths in meditation, even after we've been there and we've had those perceptions, he says, even after perceiving them, however, it is necessary to affirm constantly to dwell on the thought of one's identity with them. What he means by this is confusing. Let me leave out the middle part. Even after one has directly perceived certain thoughts of ourselves in meditation, it is necessary to affirm, I'm trying to just read you part of it, and it's not going to make sense without doing it for paragraphs. I don't want to do that. But he does say, the delusions of many incarnations can be dispelled in an instant, though to accomplish this enormous task, the will must be deeply in tune with the all-powerful will of God. So he's saying, this is what's possible. And the more deeply we keep attuning ourselves to, you know, at Ananda we would say to the vibration of these masters, but whoever your teacher is, he just puts it as the will of God. So you just can't sit there with your mind and say, I will, I will, I will. I could sit there and say forever, I'm not sick, I'm not sick. But it was just Shanti affirming that. It didn't go very far. Shanti then got sick. But as long as the more deeply attuned we are to the will of God, he says this, we can dispel these delusions of lifetimes with these practices. So, having said this, I'm going to give you each a copy of these right now because I want you to look at these affirmations. Bethany, honey, could you just take one little packet and pass them on? The problem is I didn't bring any for myself. That was a mistake. I'll do ones that I know. It's a whole packet, just the way they were turned. Yeah, just take one. There you go. Yeah, very good. Okay. No, I would rather you have. Yeah. The reason I wanted to give these out to you right now is I want you to see this is, Vinny, I can give you this later, just the way I've put it together. I have more in the office, but you don't have to read that whole thing about working with affirmations because I'm going to talk to you about it right now. But what I want you to see on page like 3, 4, 5, how many affirmations there are. These are all sets of affirmations that I've taken either from Swami Kriyananda's book, Affirmations for Self-Healing, which are wonderful and easier for people not on this path, I think, to use in the beginning. There are pages there then of affirmations from Yogananda's Scientific Healing Affirmations, which is a book that he's written, which is remarkable, with all stuff about all of his teachings about healing. So the point is, I'm going to let you look at them for a minute, then I'm going to ask you to put them down again. I just wanted you to see them. The point is to find an affirmation. If you read them, any of them, you will see that they are all statements, again, of our highest potential. Nowhere in there does it say something like, I wish I was well, I wish I was well. It doesn't even say, I want to be well, I want to be well. It says, I am well in one way or another. It says, within me lies the energy to accomplish all that I will to do. Behind my every act is God's infinite power. Within me lies the energy to accomplish all that I will to do. It doesn't say, I wish I had more energy. I'm going to affirm that thought that I wish I had it. It says, I already have energy to accomplish anything I want to do. What it doesn't actually say is, I am energy. How can energy ever get tired or run out? We are an infinite supply of energy, literally. We may have forgotten that. We may not be connected to that yet, but we will remember. Now, here's the thing. Just the way energy is magnetic, we have a negative thought. We affirm energy in the outward direction, outward into the world, duality, away from our oneness in God, in our chakras. Because that's basically what's happening in the chakras. When we're out of whack, the energy's going out. As we neutralize it, we do that by drawing that energy up the spine, which pulls it in, centralizes, and neutralizes it. So, and as you run more energy through that whirling vortex of energy, it gets rid of everything in the way. Exactly like it works if there's a stream and there's a little eddy over here with twigs and rocks and whatever, you open a dam behind it and all those twigs and rocks that were getting in the way, everything that was getting in the way, are going to be swept up into the stream. The greater the will, the greater the flow of energy, and they're going to flow with, go with the flow. In this case, in a river to the ocean. In our case, up our astral spine to the point between our eyebrows, because that's where we want everything to go. When we get our energy here, that is when we remember who we are. That is when we feel truly peaceful, truly calm. We know true joy. We know love in all of its divine manifestation. In fact, we become love. You know? And you can think about any single thing that you think you've ever wanted in your life. And it will relate back to becoming one of these qualities, in which case you will have attained exactly what you thought you were trying to get by being out here and working it all out, where we can never work it out, even if we're deluded for a moment into thinking that we've done that. It never lasts. It won't work. It's not the final answer. But those divine qualities, becoming them, are the final answer. And it affects everything in our whole lives. Swami Kriyananda tells so many stories of moving through the world and of people wanting to give him things, free nights in hotels, free upgrades, free meals. You know, why did I walk back into a car mechanic's place and a car rental place? They are about the driest, most drab, lifeless places in the world, and everybody in the places come running up and hug me. Why did that happen? Chandra said to me, I can't believe this. I said, of course you can. You would have done the same thing. But that's what happens. You become what you've been looking for. You think you're looking for love in the world? Just become it. You start drawing it to yourself everywhere. You're looking to feel peace under all situations, in all situations, under all circumstances? Become it. So all of that energy, we can magnetize it to go in the direction that we want. When I said to you before, Master said, I'm losing his, what was the quote about in the ether? He's, what's the word he used?
Registered.
Registered, thank you, I couldn't think of the word. Registered in the ether as energy, remember. So that's what we're doing. We're using these affirmations that they've given us, and we are working with them, knowing absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt that they are the truth. Doesn't matter where we are, we're affirming the truth. And ultimately, the truth means that we will be one. You know, at the end of every single Sunday service, at the very end, when the light bearers are up here, and one of the light bearers is holding up a light that we've been praying to, blessing throughout our whole service. So that light, gaze upon this light as a symbol of God's love, we say in our service. So the light is not just any old candle now. To us, it's become the love of God. And that's only maybe halfway through the festival of light, how we end our Sunday service every Sunday. So from that point on, we have held that light as a symbol of God, of the divine. And we've gone on and we've said many more things. And we've prayed to it and we've chanted around it. And then, at the very end of service, the light bearers go up and they light candles from that light, in essence, letting the light and love of the divine flow into this candle that we're holding. We become channels for that. That's what we're doing, those of us who are of the human condition, pure channels, trying to be ever increasingly pure channels, as we say also in the festival, of this light and love to the world. Okay, then we say, for those of you who feel so inclined, we invite you to come to the altar now and receive a touch of light from the Masters. As you approach, offer a prayer of gratitude to the infinite Christ, in whose love our line of Masters have descended, that we might all come to know God. Pray too for the grace to share with all as you have received. And this is the line. Every Sunday, I open my heart to this as much as I can. For you are a part of all that is. May the light of Christ, the infinite consciousness, shine upon you. Pray too for the grace to share with all as you have received, as you've been sitting here in all of this energy, whatever way it's touched you, whatever you now know or have become that you weren't before, this beautiful light that we're about to put on your forehead, basically saying, may the light of Christ, the infinite consciousness, shine in you. We say upon you when we first, but that's what that touch of light is. It's so beautiful. It's an opportunity to feel one with God. And that's what these affirmations are. But that's a huge phrase. But we have to remember that when we are saying them, repeating them, aspiring to that goal, trying to remember who we really are, we are pure, super conscious energy. That is the reason to be doing these. These affirmations work. I promise you, they work. One of the handouts that I gave you today, the last page of your handout, if you look at it for a minute, is I heard it, I don't know where it came from, but there's a woman up at the village whose name is Anandi. And she, years ago, I don't know if she came upon it in her notes or whatever happened, but it's called the Peace and Harmony Prayer. And it's written out how to do it. So I'm not going to say it now. I don't even quite remember how many times a day in this moment. But she tells so many stories of people who were in dire straits, who started doing this peace and harmony prayer, really at odds with bosses, with partners, with... And I heard her tell so many stories till one day I started telling people who come to me here at the church for spiritual counseling, a lot of people do, that I started accumulating my own stories. People would call me 2 days later. This is the truth. I just reminded myself of it this morning because I haven't shared it with anybody in about 6 months or maybe even a year. And say to me, Shanti, you won't believe it. I started doing this, and 2 days later, my boss, who I knew was about to fire me, came up and said, you know what, let's talk. I think you've been doing a great job. Or what, the boss doesn't know that this person's been sitting at home really doing the peace and harmony prayer. You can't fake these things. You have to do it. What did Swamiji say? With all the awareness and concentration, with all the willpower, you do these things and they work. And that is the point of the affirmations. And then once we have ourselves, and we're going to just go through a couple here and talk a little bit about them, and then we're going to practice them a little bit. But once we have ourselves in that super conscious state, from there then we pray from that place. This is why Swamiji, every Sunday we do one of these affirmations. There's 52 of them in the book. They're not all on your paper. And it's one a week. And they're phenomenal. And then the whole point is to really work with that affirmation all week. And what does that mean, to work with it? Well, first, you'll see later when you read this, you start saying it really loudly. Swamiji tells a very cute story somewhere. I don't think I've given it to you. Where, I'm not going to get the story exactly right, but a woman said to her priest or her minister one day, you know, you always chant so loudly or pray so loudly. Why are you doing that? And he said, well, God's a long way away. I have to make sure he hears me. And of course, God is not a long way away because, you know, we are a part of all that is. He's right here. But we need to chant loudly. We need to get our energy going. We need to let God know. Because here's something that we need to let God know, let me finish this sentence, that we mean this, that we are aspiring to be our highest potential. Under no circumstance in any way can the divine come to us. When you think of what we're talking about, we're not talking about a friend who wants to come and help us out. I mean, the divine is that, but it's not another being. It's not a separate being. We can never be helped until we invite the help in. And we have to mean it. You can't pull the wool over God's eyes. What did God say in the Bible? God will not be mocked, Jesus said. There's no way. You either mean it and you say it like you mean it, or it's just not going to happen. And it's not because God is some punishing presence who won't come to us. It's because we are energy and we are magnetic. And we're either genuinely opening that magnetic channel and inviting those experiences to come to us, or we're not. It's a law. It's a law of the universe. And God himself cannot break his own law. It's virtually impossible. So as soon as we do these in a way that we mean it, then we can be helped. And if we don't, we can't be. And there's no getting around it. So we start very loudly. And we basically saying, I'm here. I mean it. I'm raising energy. I'm getting this energy going. I'm saying it out loud. And then we say it quieter and quieter and quieter because we're trying to take it from being an outward show of energy to an inward realization of the energy that is in these chakras. Same way that I was talking about with chanting before. It's exactly the same thing. Now, I often tell people that if they're having trouble meditating, it's very nice to keep an empty book near your altar and a pen or a pencil, whatever you like writing with. Hopefully everybody's written some recently. You can't do this on the computer. It's just simply not the same. And you take an affirmation or a mantra, but we're talking about affirmations today, and you just write it over and over and over. It is so calming. It is so uplifting. And it really slows you down. I can say to you, within me lies the energy to accomplish all that I will to do. But if you try writing that with awareness and concentration, it takes a long time. You're writing, within me lies the energy, and you're writing that whole affirmation. But you're writing it over and over if you're having trouble focusing and meditating. Remember what we're doing. We're getting the mind to do something that's going to lift it literally up outside of itself, beyond itself. Not the soul identified with the body, but the pure soul. And we're just using the mind as the initial vehicle. And then we're going to be free of it. And we'll do that by using these affirmations. So, can I borrow somebody's little list of affirmations now for a moment, please? So what it's good to do is to go through these affirmations and find something that feels relevant to you now. You'll know it as soon as you read it. You have access to all of these. You don't have to do the same one. You have to do it enough till you've absorbed it energetically. That's the point. This can't be rote. That's not what it's about. If it's mindless, if it's unconscious, is probably a better way to say that, it's not going to affect our consciousness. If we do it with great intention, you know, something else that Yogananda said is God watches the heart. It's such an important saying for all of us. He doesn't watch to see exactly what we've accomplished, literally or not. He's looking because, again, it's energy, right? If we've brought energy up into our heart, if our intention is in the right direction, then we are magnetically disposed in that way. And that divine presence can then work with our energy. So if we do these with the right intention, you will find that before you've had a chance to think about it, it will start changing you. So you find the one that just resonates with you. And then you say, I'm going to work with it. And maybe initially you work with it for a week. Who was it that was just telling me a story? Vinny, tell me if you heard this story of somebody who worked with each affirmation for a year. Somebody who's been on this path for a very long time. I don't think it was... Anyway, I can't remember who it is. Haridas. It could have been Haridas. But anyway, somebody who worked with each one for a year. Because you could take one affirmation and work with it for the rest of your life when you realize that if you get it, you will be one with God. You don't need all of these affirmations. They're just different ways. They'll appeal to different people at different times, even to each of us at different times, because we're working through our karma. So here are pages and pages of them that I've taken from different places. And you're going to find ones that resonate. And you're going to either write it or say it for some prescribed period of time or numbers of times. You might say, I'm going to write this affirmation until I've written it 108 times, which will be a lot. But so what? What else are we doing? You know, in a way, even by virtue of the fact that we're here, we all know what we're saying our goal is in this life. Even if we can't say we want to know God because that doesn't quite make sense yet, we can say we'd like to know peace. We'd like to know calmness. We'd like to feel true love. So What difference does it make how long we write it or how long we say it? Any questions or thoughts? Vinny's going to give you a microphone, and I love that you're going to share that.
I just wanted to share something that happened yesterday after yoga. And one of the things that really drew me to the yoga here was the affirmations that went with the different postures. So there's one that is on here. I radiate love and goodwill to soul friends everywhere.
Yes.
And I have one person in particular I have a very difficult time relating in any positive way to. So whenever we would do that, and Heidi would recite that, I would think, oh good, soul friends everywhere. He's not a friend, it's not a problem. So I knew that was very non-yogic, and I knew I was missing something. But I kept forgetting to ask her about it. So yesterday I did, and I said, okay, what am I missing? And she explained, and really helped a lot. And, you know, you're looking to work, connect with the soul, not the body and the energy. But it was...
That's a very sweet story. Thank you for sharing that. That takes some courage. You're looking to connect with the soul, not the personality, the body and the personality. You know, when I first moved to Ananda, so I moved into the community just soon after I was 50 years old. So I had a lot of life not living in the Ananda community. And you all know I was a physician, and a lot of my friends were physicians or whatever else my friends were doing, but a lot of the people in the world that I was connected to, you know, on the material plane, they've made it. And many of them live in really big, beautiful homes, and they have big, beautiful cars and all like that, which is wonderful. I'm happy for them. But then I moved into the Ananda community. How many of you have ever been in an apartment in the Ananda community? Okay, so, you know, there are 50s apartments, I think. Are they from the 50s? Do you know of any? Something like that, 19. Maybe they're a little newer, but not by much. And when we moved in, when we bought that whole complex, and it's big, and there's little apartments, there's studios, there's small one-bedrooms, big one-bedrooms, then there's one building filled with two-story townhouses, but they were old and really run down. We brought a lot of good, uplifting energy into them right away. I mean, the neighbors even said the whole community felt different. But still, they were still what they are. They're apartments that have been built, even if it was the 70s, I just don't know, but they're old. And many of them have these tiny little kitchens, like one person can be in the kitchen, two if you're small, but otherwise not. And just what they are. The grounds are beautiful, you know, the central part of the community. And you really, anyway, that's the point of my story. Many of my friends started coming to visit me there. And they were just like, I mean, no way could they understand what I was doing in that community. But instead of saying to me, how are you living like this in these apartments, when I had just moved out of, I moved there after I had been living for the previous 5 years in a 10,000 square foot home on 100 acres of land that I was renting, but I'd lived there for years. It was a national historic landmark in Maryland. Beautiful. I mean, really exquisite. And, you know, I had it furnished nicely. It was what it was. And I moved from there right into a studio apartment in Ananda. People would come. But the question that they often asked me, instead of commenting on the physical, they say, well, what are you doing here? I mean, do you actually really like everyone here? That's what they would say. Do you like everyone here? And I would try and explain, I could do it better now. That was a lot of years ago, but that it really never even dawned on me, or most of the time, I'd love to say never, but most of the time, about whether I was liking people or not. Because I was at a point in my life where I did not want to connect with everybody's personality anymore. And again, am I able to carry this through 100%? No. I wish I could, but I'm not there yet. But I'm going there. What I loved about these people is that they were seeing everybody as soul friends. And we were connecting like that. Everybody wanted the same thing. Everybody who lives in that community is there because they are trying to remember for themselves that we are one with all that is. And they are willing, very often, to be extraordinarily humble about these big, I mean, talk about big personalities. Look at me. You know, I'm such a pain in the rear end to so many people, and I have such a big personality wrapped around me. That's what I was telling you before when I used to pray, please don't let me talk so much. You know, but fortunately, people have looked at me in a way that transcends my personality, that appreciates the effort that I'm putting out, the willingness, my heart being open much of the time. So when I make a mistake with them, I would say they forgive me, but sometimes I think it goes beyond their even noticing and having to forgive me. They're holding me like an affirmation. It's a really beautiful thing. You see, that's a hard thing to try and discuss. We kind of all come together here, and all the personality stuff is going on down here. Do we ever bump into each other? Of course we do. We're human beings. If we didn't, we wouldn't even be in these bodies. But way more often than was ever happening when I was living in all the beautiful homes I've lived in, and they're living in all their beautiful homes, struggling. And the struggle here is very different. I'll never forget one time when there was a certain person in the community who was trying to talk me into being less powerful. This was pretty early on when I got there. And this person was telling me, you can't behave this way. You can't, like, really basically have so many great ideas and so much energy because people are going to think you're trying to take over and they're not going to like you. You're too new here. And I thought about it overnight. And the next day I called this person. I said, come on over. I want to talk with you. And I said, you know, it dawned on me in the middle of the night that what you were talking about was not really what everybody else is going to think and feel, but what you're thinking and feeling. And without even a second, this person said to me, you're right. And they said, I have some scars, meaning some old inclinations, tendencies, some scars, difficulties with powerful women. And then I said to the person, look, you're around this community a lot. If you walk around this community and say, look at her, she's just trying to be a know-it-all. She's trying to take over, whatever that meant. That was ridiculous. The person knew it right away, too. That's how people are going to hold me. If you walk around and you say, wow, look at this. She's been here a year. She's bringing a lot of good energy. She's so willing to serve. She's got great ideas. She wants to do a lot. People are really going to hold it all in a very different place. Said, you're in a very powerful position. And again, this person just said, you're absolutely right, and thank you for helping me get out of myself. And that's the kind, I was so impressed with that. You know what that conversation would have been like in most places in my world prior to that? I don't know what you're talking about. This is what I'm saying. You think you're too great. I could just hear how it would have gone. There was none of that. And everything changed. They were committed to that. Everything changed. And it all wraps up with what we're talking about. And I'm so glad that you got to hear that. You know, it's interesting, Nancy. When I'm working with clients in my practice, my medical practice now, so it's not the same as here. Here I'm assuming you all came to hear a talk based on what affirmations mean as it comes through this path. Otherwise, you would not have plunked yourself down in the Ananda Church today. But in the practice, I have to be, of course, I want to be much more mindful and not impose any, I don't want to impose anything on anybody anywhere, but people often say to me, you know, we'll talk about what's going on medically and other ways, because people don't just come for medical issues. And then we'll talk about what they can do. It might be right affirmations. Some of you have heard me say this. It might be I can feel somebody's energies blocked in a way that wouldn't serve them for me to say it out loud. So I talk to them about painting or about going away for a weekend with their partner. And I've said to several of you, you've heard me say this in Sunday services and elsewhere, I often write it on a prescription pad because people listen, then it works. It's a prescription from the doctor. And it can be all kinds of things. I mean, I've written, lay on the floor and play with your puppy. You know, because if I think somebody's really like too whatever, it's just, it's not always such a simple translation, but it's an intuitive energy thing. And they'll listen, and then they'll say to me at an end of a visit, okay, but how am I going to get better? And I say, no, you're going to get better by, but what else can I do? Or I say to people many times, come to chanting Friday night, not even in the practice, but people who come to see me here, or come to yoga classes, or just come and take classes. Okay, but how am I going to get rid of, or how am I going to fix? No, that's how you're going to do it. And I'm saying it to you because the more we put ourselves in places where energy is uplifted, the more we will heal. It's not logical. You can't totally explain it. I've tried really hard today. Sitting in this church today is changing all of us. And I love what you're saying, that you went to that class, that you had the courage to ask that question and hear the answer. And I'm saying this out loud, intentionally, onto this video, that it's bit by bit by bit. It's that one little story. Well, I really have to admit to you that I was saying, oh, good soul friends, and he's not a friend. No, he's not, but he's a soul. And that's what matters. And every time we put ourselves anywhere, we are affirming these realities. We're moving up into it. When I think now of what the people in the community had to live with me those many years ago, I know what they still have to live with in terms of me. But in all these years of living there and being here and doing what I do, I'd like to think I've come a long way and I'm a little easier to bump into and I have a little more to offer energetically. But as a rule, people just embraced me, not literally. I don't go out to dinner with everybody in the community. I don't take walks with everybody in the community. But I meditate with everybody in the community. I chant with them. I share Sunday service classes. I serve with them in more ways than I can tell you. And in that way, I'm radiating love and goodwill to soul friends everywhere, as are they. And it's so beautiful. And then you start realizing there's not a soul that's not a friend because we're all one. We're all connected. We cannot have a negative thought about a person without it profoundly affecting us. We can't, because as Master said, it's not do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's do unto others because they are you. Do unto others in a certain way. I think I have that right. But I know the end I have right. When we start realizing that this illusion of separateness is nothing more than an illusion, it's so mind-boggling that it's impossible to talk about. We just have to keep coming to classes and yoga classes and Sunday services. And eventually we just know something that is literally beyond words. That's the first book I ever bought at East West. It was a book called Beyond Words. And it was Swami Satchitananda, because he had a way of sharing what I'm trying to say and not doing as well as him right now. There are certain things you cannot put into words. The mind that asked the question could never understand the answer. But I guarantee you, all of you, if you just keep coming with the right attitude, wanting to head in the right direction, your life will change in all good ways. Will it be scary at times? Yes. Might it have a price tag in the material world? It might. You know, I used to watch people who would come into, I was medical director for many years of a drug and alcohol program. That's a subspecialty of mine. And I can't tell you the number of people who came in. There was an addict or an alcoholic. We call them the designated patient. And the family would be saying, if they just get clean and sober, everything will be fine. And I would be thinking to myself, oh dear. But I never said it out loud. But how many times do we see marriages that have to end after that? Or families that instead of coming more together are less together? And why is that? You know, because somebody's changing their energy. And there's just no way. It's like the story I told last week at the Death and Dying about that book, I Was a Monk, you know, with the Catholic priest. I don't want to take a whole, because now he was having an experience of the truth. And with all the love in the world, he had to leave the Catholic Church. You know, it's just very interesting. We have many ways of being changed. And sometimes, I mean, he lost everything he'd known in his life until then. So things will happen. But as long as you keep your eye on the goal, on the light, if thine eye be single, Jesus said, if thine eye be single, then things will happen, but we'll move. And that, you know, just say to you, I mean, your story just really touched me because it was such a profound experience for you. Then you share it here, then it goes out. And believe me, many, many times in all of our lives, we want these teachings to be true, other than in this instance, other than with this one person who irritates us or this one aspect of our relationship or whatever it is. But truth is truth. It's one and eternal. And there you have it. Anything else? We may end early if nobody has anything else to add or say. Let me just think if there's anything Swamiji said that I want to say that I haven't. You know, I really think that I've said, really everything I wanted to say today. Feels, are we okay?
Can I say something?
Sure, please do. Just wait till you have the microphone. I want you to.
So I just wanted to affirm that, you know, coming here and practicing, you know, the affirmations and everything on this path, like, it is true that material possessions for me have become so much less important. Like, I want less, you know, fewer material things, and just like friendships have shifted. You know, you were saying there's a price tag, and that sometimes it's scary, and it is. But it's really worthwhile. Yeah, because I mean, friendships have shifted. I feel different, and the dynamic is different. And yeah, so I mean, I've let go of some friendships because, you know, they're not uplifting. But it just opens more space for me to have more uplifting friendships. So
that's very nice. Yeah. You know, I realize that it's very important that none of these changes that take place in our lives come to us as shoulds. Oh, I shouldn't hang around with these people now. Or trying to think of what it was somebody asked me. Oh, I know. I recently made a new acquaintance slash friend, I would say friend, of somebody who's right in the middle of her life, right around the age of 40, and she's separating from her husband, but it's been going on for a long time. And also coming upon these teachings, and it just happened for her, like, this is her life. And I think it's true. It is. I don't mean this exact place, but these teachings where she is. And she was saying to me, well, I just don't know what to do because I don't feel done with relationships. Like, my marriage has been difficult for quite a while, and I still feel young, and I'm thinking that I would still like to maybe have a relationship. And she was so worried that I was going to say to her, nope, it's the spiritual path and nothing else at all. And it's just, it's sort of an obvious example again about, you know, as we're ready, we shift. So you said, and it's right, you just do it. You just start doing the affirmations. And then you just find, I really don't want to be spending that much time around this person anymore. It just isn't feeling like whatever it felt like. And I think if we think about karma, you know, we talk about karma and reincarnation like a body comes in and a soul comes in, and it stays in this body. As long as it needs this body, that is this life, to grow spiritually. As long as it can get any more spiritual miles out of this life, it'll stay. And when it's time to move on, it will. And it will inhabit the next body that suits it then. And I think it happens in this life with relationships in that way. Relationships are there, and just because we have to leave them does not mean they were bad, that they didn't serve an incredible purpose, even if they were difficult, even if they were loving. Sometimes it just happens that the karma's been worked out. There's a completion. And I've watched it happen many, many times, and it feels right to me that the relationship end. Even there are times where I've seen where children decide that they really cannot be in touch with their parents anymore, and it's made sense to me, or even harder, parents with their children. And sometimes I can just see nobody's going to benefit. In fact, it will harm everybody. And to me, it feels like when we can move and change and transform with energy lifting up, with heart wide open, so that you can separate, leave a friendship, separate from somebody, being able to genuinely love them. I don't mean that emotional, hold on. I mean really love the divine in them and be sending perfectly pure, loving energy their way, no harm comes. It's different than when you have to leave angrily or you have to leave and shut your heart down. Because if your heart shuts down, if your heart is shut down, it's shut down. It's just, there you are, you're blocked. And you're not hurting that other person nearly as much as you're hurting yourself. But I remember many, many years ago when I was trying to figure out what to do with this marriage that I'm still in, which has transformed itself into just such a really beautiful, beautiful relationship now. But as I've said, and I said last week, was not easy in the making. And I was trying to figure out at one point what to do, and I had a spiritual epiphany that's very long and involved, and I don't want to go into it now, but one of the parts of it, and again, this wasn't me thinking this out, but a knowing, was when I knew for sure, deep inside of me, that I had been not just the very best that I could be, but that I had loved my husband in the way that felt full and rich and right and non-judgmental and expansive. I mean, there were a lot of, it didn't really have all these words, because it was just when you know that you've been the best here that you can be, and it's still not working, then you can leave. And you can leave with a clear conscience. But the truth was, when I was actually able to accomplish that, the whole relationship was able to transform, and we could be who we are now. I, of course, had no idea in those days how much I was the one in the way, because I was busy thinking it was him that was in the way. But just interesting. So, I mean, I think, though, that came to me as a spiritual epiphany, so not my thoughts, when you can genuinely know that your heart's open to people, you'll be able to just keep moving without what we used to call baggage. That's what baggage is. It's our own ways that we're stuck. We get unstuck, and it's genuine. Because once that happens, no matter who or what you're having to leave or move on from, or whatever the situation is, a job, just doesn't matter. You're holding it all in a place of super consciousness, and it's perfect. It's just, I hope that makes sense, because I don't know any other way to say it. And again, no matter what it is, when you have transcended your own egotistical, egocentric grasp on it, then it's okay when things just melt away like that. It's right. And it will happen. There's no doubt about it. seems to be a day for me to quote the Bible, and I don't know why that is. I don't usually do this that much. But that line in the Bible that says, "And the light shineth, but the darkness comprehended it not," is very, very powerful. It's always powerful to me. And I've realized this many times in my life right now, or in recent years. Not only can we not tolerate in a certain way being around the wrong music, the wrong food, wrong colors for that matter, never mind wrong people, meaning wrong for our energy, for the frequency at which we're vibrating, for wherever is happening in our chakras. They can't stand us, you know? And I said this, you can't put on Swami Kriyananda chanting Om in your home and think everybody's going to come in and love it. Even people have come into my home on a couple of occasions and just said to me, it's too, you know, that you watch them try and get their mind right. It's too neat. It's too quiet. It's calm there. It's totally sattvic. It's a place where people come to meditate. There's never a television on there. I mean, almost never. Maybe once a year if some crisis is going on or something. But literally, in the world that I feel I need to know about. You know, there's never any music but inspired music. People feel that when they walk in. And it doesn't suit everybody. So here we are saying, how are we going to lift our energy up? That is what transformation is. That's why these affirmations and yoga, Ananda yoga, not all yoga really, but Ananda yoga with these affirmations, it just changes your life. Have you done any yoga here yet? It's lovely, yeah. So it's just transforming. And you two are speaking to that really in different ways. You know, I'm a little concerned, Vinny, and I'm going to ask you while this video is running. I heard the microphone on when Bethany was speaking, but not when Nancy was speaking. Was it being captured? Okay, very good. Okay, because what she said was so important, and I spoke around it. Okay, are we done for the day? I think so. Okay, thank you all.